Welcome to Closer to Venus. I'm Joni Burke, and today's guest is Vasundhara Gupta. She is a spiritual writer, certified life coach, and past life regression facilitator. Her work involves exploring past life regression stories to help demystify hypnotherapy. In this episode, we will discuss karma and soul contracts. Vasundhara, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Johnny. It was so interesting being here the last time, and I cannot wait for our conversation tenfold today.
Indeed, it was. And in many cases, a lot of the episodes will spill into a part two, so as not to force someone to put their life's work into 40 minutes worth of an episode. So very cool stuff. So today we talk about karma and soul contracts. And I think we can agree that karma is one of the most misunderstood things in the mystical, metaphysical world. Do you agree?
100%. It's such a complicated and yet easy sounding concept. And I feel like at some point or the other, we assume too much about it.
True. Most of the time, when I hear people speak about karma, it seems to be connected to punishment, which we don't think is necessarily the same thing. We'll get into that as well. But what we're going to talk about today is how karma is related to soul contracts, which is a whole nother kettle of fish, so to speak. So to start with, what exactly are soul contracts and why do we set them?
So how I see soul contracts is that we have a group of people around us, a group of souls, if you may, that choose to take birth with us in different roles so that they help us in our healing journey and we help them. So for instance, if I'm married to my partner, he's making sure he brings out certain things for me to see. And the way we can explore this a little bit deeper is when you have a relationship with a friend and they're a certain way with you, but then when they're with someone else, they seem to be a certain way. That is a form of delivery of soul contract. So someone might be more easy with you because you don't have that lesson with them to learn, whereas they might be more harsh or more prudent with other people. We are all here to just take each other home.
Take each other home. I like that. And in this case, the soul contracts are conducted in, I believe, the life between lives space, which means in between incarnations. And the way you described it sounds like what many others before have described, something that almost looks like we're casting a movie or we're casting a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
Characters, yeah. What roles are available, what the objectives are, where the marks are, and so on. So in your case, with your partner, your husband, you're pretty sure that you had a soul contract with him, for example.
Yeah, I go into length about this on my blog, speaking about destiny versus free will, and how I lived in India back in the day, and I had no intentions of leaving my parents because I'm an only child. I wanted to stay in India. I wanted to stay in proximity of them. And yet, every time we got this prospect, I'm arranged marriage. That's just how I chose to do it in my culture. And it was a beautiful decision. But at the time, I was not ready to move to Canada in order to be with anyone. So every time the prospect would come to meet my partner, I'd be like, no, I don't want to leave the country. I don't want to leave my parents. I noticed the universe collapsing. And I saw that my scope to move around in my life became smaller and smaller. So I wanted to shift out of my career and enter into something else. Nothing was opening up for me. I was having a lot of resistance in my health. A lot of things were falling apart within my relationships. And I was like, hang on, there's something going on here where I'm required to do something very different. There's no way that the girl that's like watching angel numbers and synchronicities and living by the universe's books is suddenly just like crashing everywhere.
Really? The universe collapsing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a consequence of you not following a preordained path or keeping with the soul contract, or is that something different?
I do see it as that. I don't think it happens in every aspect of our life. We have a big playground where we get to show up and play and make mistakes, quote unquote mistakes. But there are certain things we are required to do. And when the time comes, we will notice that the universe pretty much just plucks us up from one place and puts us in another. And they're like, move along. Like, that old path isn't for you anymore. Your time is done. Keep moving forward. So I do believe destiny and soul contract and karma have a very strong force at that time.
What is the easiest way to describe the life between lives space to someone that's never experienced it, where they can really get their heads around the cycle. We live a life, we die, we go into that space, and there's many names for it. I believe the Buddhists call it the bardo, and there's several different bardos, I think. Then we choose our life and we choose our soul family, I guess, and we reincarnate with them in many cases over and over. Other than what I just tried to explain, what's the easiest way to get people to accept and acknowledge it, that this isn't a fairy tale, this is actually what happens?
I love how you're putting me on the spot after giving the full definition. And you're like, what else do you have to add to that? And how can you make it the easiest?
Right. It sounds almost too good to be true. Like, we can decide, for instance, you're going to be the girl that breaks my heart. You're going to be the guy that I beat up because you were the bully in the last life and it's your turn to play the victim, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds almost like it's too easy.
That's true when you think of it in theory. Right? How much of our life goes living in our head and trying to execute, and then the execution is way harder. So we have to remember that as souls, we don't experience pain because we're not in a body. So when you're trying to explain this concept to someone, it's like, imagine you're pretty much in a different realm. Or let's say I want to explain this to a kid. I would say, you know, you've met certain people before and they haven't shown up yet in your life. So when you meet them, sometimes they're going to make you happy, sometimes they're going to make you sad, but remember, it's all a part of the big game. We're all here to play a big game together. I would kind of speak to like a child in that way.
It is like a game, like you're choosing teams, you know, where you're playing kickball or baseball or something on the playground, and you did use the term playground before. With your clients, can you give us some examples of how they discover that space, the life between life space?
A lot of them will come in with the specific intention of wanting to do past life regression or connecting with their soul guides. So that's how we discover that space. I will say I don't hang out in that space that much with them. So I have never done a review for a life in order to plan the next life. There is nothing of that sort. But we've always looked at a past life that's undigested, and we will try to see what the lessons are and how those lessons are parallel to the current lifetime.
All right. Now, let's talk about how the soul contracts are related to karma. People are already confused when they think they know what karma is. Whenever you hear someone says, oh, yeah, that's karma. And I feel like saying, well, actually, no, it isn't. But I know better than to speak up, at least in my civilian life.
The relationship, we've explored what soul contracts are. And karma, which comes from Hinduism, which comes from Advaita Vedanta, is a concept that says whatever you put out into the world comes back at a human level, right? But if you just explore it from a scientific perspective, it's a law of cause and effect. When there's a cause, there's an effect. So the first clarification that is required is karma is not always a bad thing. It's not the bad guy. It's just here to do its job. So if you think of all the relationships you have, you will have some positive relationships. That's also karma. It's not always the negative stuff, but that one feels more painful in the human body. And when we combine the two theories of soul contracts and karma together, what we're saying is, if I'm required to learn the lesson or reap the rewards, quote unquote, whatever the rewards could be for something, that can be created for me through another relationship. It doesn't always have to be that way. There's this whole frame of mind around land contracts. So we're destined to be around certain cultures and certain planets and continents in order to execute certain parts of our soul contract or our karma. To simplify it even further, it's just to say, in order for you to experience the full cycle of the cause and the effect, there will be certain people that show up for you, and those will be our soul contracts.
The soul contract versus soul family, it's been explained to me, is that your soul family are often members, soul brother, soul sister, and so on and so forth, that we tend to reincarnate over and over with until we learn our lesson, or maybe they're our soul family forever. How does that work?
What I've discovered is just through my own past life regression, not so much from others, but reading Dr. Michael Newton's work and kind of going through my own past life regression, the common theme is that soul family does not always translate to biological family. And it also does not translate to proximity in every lifetime. You might have certain soul family members that just show up very briefly in a current lifetime. They might be there to just, I don't know, they're in the subway and you see them and you have a positive conversation and it just shifts your perspective. They're very momentarily there for us, but it's in those moments that we need them to be there.
Good point. I like that. So they can be someone you met for a very brief period and then you never see them again, but they had an impact on you.
And I've heard that for soul guides as well. So I feel like we do say that soul guides do not incarnate and they do not interact with us, but there have been instances where, similar to the effect of a soul tribe or soul family member, the guide will show up in order to course correct for us. So a soul guide stepping in is actually more intimate. There's more intervention required there, where a major course correction could be required. Whereas a soul family member will step in as a part of the contract. And now we have to kind of go into this as well, where contracts can be dynamic. They're not always done pre-birth. They do keep evolving as we go. So if we think about the theory how our soul isn't fully in the body, it doesn't need to be. And that souls can split into multiple bodies to learn multiple lessons within the same time frame.
Okay.
Then from that lens, it's not necessary for a soul contract to be limited to what happened, what was decided pre-birth.
It can be morphing and it can be changing. All right.
And depending on your evolution, right? So for the generations of souls that are dedicated to self-development work, one factor I've noticed is relationships end sooner, so the divorce rate is higher. It doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing or a good thing, but it's just that if you've learned a lesson quicker, you don't need to stay with the same person for 30 years to play out those lessons. Now you've taken it on yourself to heal it and move on. For the same way, friendships end sooner than they did back in the day.
Exactly. Soul guides. Are you referring to spirit guides or something different?
Soul guides, spirit guides, I see them the same.
Same thing. I've heard different opinions on that. Some people say they don't incarnate. Others will tell me that it could be one of your loved ones, could be your mom or family member or a friend that passed that is taking on that task of being there for you. Does that make sense or is that just a matter of opinion? How does that work?
I would say we have to experience it for ourselves. But then if you look into the area of mysticism and clairvoyance and using like a Ouija board, like those channels and mediums, they're also connecting to something higher and they usually don't have any insight before. So when you go into that session with them, they will reveal something about a passed away loved one and that message will come through. But sometimes it just comes from higher consciousness and it's like, this is what you need to know. So for example, oracle cards, you could assume that you're connecting with a guide when you're getting guidance from an oracle card, but you could also say you're connecting to spirit, like your own spirit, or you're connecting to the universe. So it really depends, but we all ultimately are one consciousness. So I don't think we need to get stuck in the labels. However, it's just soothing for some people to say, well, that was my mom.
Right.
Or that was my soul guide.
Speaking of soul guides, do they frequently show up in your work? Let's say if you're doing a past life regression, a session with a client.
I mandate it. And this is why, because sometimes I'm in a session with a client where they're not vocalizing everything they're experiencing from the past life, or I may also not pick up on what their lesson is. So I remove my authority. I remove myself from the situation. I'm just the facilitator. And the invitation before the past life regression begins is, let's invite your ancestor, a soul guide, or a spirit animal, whatever feels good for you, whoever shows up, and have them support you along the way of this journey. And then once they've watched the life, we'll bring them into review. It's usually multiple soul guides that will appear for the review.
Multiple. Okay. Mm-hmm. Soul guides or spirit guides really do come up a lot in conversation with many different speakers. And they've always told me that everyone has them. No exceptions. Right. All right. So going back to the soul contract, what happens if you don't learn the lesson of that particular contract?
Sometimes a lesson comes up to us in many ways at the same time. And a big part of the work I do is discovering the pattern that is common. So there's something happening with your boss and then your sister and then your partner. If you're agitated by all three, the common denominator is yourself. There's agitation because, so it might be a boundary issue or it might be something else. Who knows, a forgiveness issue. So if you don't learn that lesson, it will keep blowing up. And that doesn't necessarily become clear right away. But we have to remember that if a lesson is really showing up for us and we're feeling really in a lot of pain and there's a lot of resistance, you've probably been exposed to this lesson in numerous times before. So it's not to say that you don't learn it once and then it'll just come and bite you. But it's to say that maybe over lifetimes you've been trying to learn this. And the importance of it kind of shifting is an impediment in your growth. That's why the universe is putting more pressure for you to really get it this time, to really slow down, pause, do it differently this time.
This also implies that we have several lifetimes. So in your work with your clients, do you have an idea of like the average number of lifetimes that we have? Or is that something that's not really a big concern either way?
I don't like to go into the technicalities because I like to stay away from whatever could imply to the ego that they're better or less than. So concepts of my soul is old, concepts of my soul is a master soul. I don't go into those things because that's not helpful for the person in my lens. So I don't know the answer to that question. Don't explore it.
But we have more than one lifetime.
Yes.
Yeah. This is what I was trying to get at. Okay. And I've heard hundreds or even thousands. As hard as that is to get our heads around it, that seems to be the consensus. So, and speaking of soul contracts, right, and lessons, what are the typical lessons or what are the most common ones that you hear about?
When it comes to resolving karma with another person, a lot of it does have to do with forgiveness work. So people will experience a lot of atrocity or a lot of suffering for no known reason. And they're required to find something in their heart that says this doesn't matter. What happened doesn't matter. Because here's the thing, it's not to gaslight the other person or to dismiss their pain, but it's to say there's a part of you that was never affected by this. Go deeper and find that part of you. So that's one, forgiveness. And then another I would say is around boundaries. We've got so many people pleasers. I tend to attract them because I am a recovering people pleaser myself.
Recovering people pleaser. I like that. We'll have to touch on that as well. But I guess you're bringing that up for a very good reason, right?
So it's like you are a wonderful person, but you're masking that. So the difference between being nice and being kind, being nice is a mask. Being kind is who you really are in your heart. And a lot of the people that we attract in our soul contracts will force us to reevaluate our boundaries and be like, nope, you get to be authentic. You don't have to mask yourself around me. And I will still accept you or I will walk away. But either way, you will be happy with yourself. And that is a lesson they're here to teach us. Those are two common themes I've seen a lot.
Really? Okay, good, good. And forgiveness does come up a lot as well. Can we break free from the soul contract? Or in other words, can we acknowledge it and say, I must have made that contract at some point, but I don't want to do that anymore. What are the consequences of doing that?
When you think of breaking a soul contract, you have to realize there's nothing to break. If there's a person in your life that is creating fiction or pain, then that is here for you. And before I say this, actually, I'm not saying if you're in an abusive relationship, stay there. That's not what I'm saying. But if there's something activated within you, it's for you to take care of. So in that moment, when you're being challenged by someone, whatever is being challenged within you will need to be taken care of regardless of whether you're with that person or not. So from that lens, there's nothing to break because your contract really isn't with the person. It's with yourself.
It's with ourself rather than the other person. Okay. It's actually the first time I've heard that. Okay. It seems to me that soul contracts imply it's with another person, another entity, another company or something like that. So, but you're saying the contract is with ourself and there's really nothing to break. So there's no consequences.
We'll come to that piece as well, but I want to reiterate this idea. The contract isn't really with the other person because you've just picked one out of a billion possibilities to learn the lesson with that person. They're just the vessel. They're just the vehicle, rather. But you get to decide whether you learn the lesson or not. So the contract is really with yourself. I'm deciding in this lifetime, this is what I want to learn. And if you want to come out of a relationship and you fear that you're not learning the lesson, trust that the universe will bring that lesson to you and you can set the intention. I want to learn the lesson with love. I want to learn this lesson, but I want to do it with love. I will share a very personal example. I've been on the journey of motherhood for years now, yet to have a child. And there came a point where I was under medications that were damaging my mental and physical and chemical health. I felt like everyone was saying this is the only way to do it. And I said to the universe, if this is the only way to do it, I don't want to do it, but I know that you have options for me. And I'm going to lean into those and I'm going to learn the lesson of motherhood through love. Because I know there's a journey of struggle required in this, but I'm not willing to destroy my mental, physical, and chemical health for that. I was very blessed during the past couple of months to discover a different route. One that the world would have said is much more painful, but for me, I breezed through it. There were synchronicities. I was held with love and light, and I did not feel a fraction of pain. So from that perspective, instead of running away from the contract we have with ourselves, it's a very simple calling. Can you give me a different way to learn this, dear universe?
A different way to learn it. Okay. All right. Let's go back to karma. What are the most common misconceptions?
We talked about one, which is like karma is not always the bad guy, or like I would kind of say in a sassy way, karma is not the bitch.
All right. Okay. You said it, not me, but yeah, I like that. Good way to put it. I know there's got to be more than one. There's got to be probably several.
There's so many. So one thing is that we can't wait around because karma doesn't happen on our timeline. The universe has ways of delivering this that can be within the lifetime, not within the lifetime, right? So it's important to not just sit there and wait for the other person to be served. It just requires your energy to move away from that because you're creating more debt when you're stuck in that limbo with them. You are creating something. I haven't fully tapped into this myself because it's very complicated, but you create something that doesn't allow karma to fully kick in. So you need to remove yourself from the situation and let the universe do its thing. Don't go into revenge mode yourself. Otherwise, you will create more karma for yourself. That's another one. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's in their hands. It's not. We're not here to do that. We're here to exit the cycle.
Okay. So when you say the cycle, might that be, for instance, someone totally triggers you, is just completely irritating, or just a very vengeful person? It could be a brother, it could be a girlfriend, it could be anybody. Is it better to walk away and forgive them even though you don't want to, just to get out of that situation? Step off the wheel of karma, in other words?
That could be one way. Sometimes karma is, again, this is where the complexity shows up, because if your lesson here is to not walk away and not run away from problems, then even if you try to walk away, you won't be able to. I've heard this from so many clients where they're like, I'm trying to leave the relationship, but I can't. I'm trying to leave and I can't. What does that tell me? There's something I need to learn while staying here. And my default pattern can't be that I just leave. So it's very tricky. It depends really on the person's contract, what the best outcome could be for them and what is required of them.
So if your gut feeling is, this is definitely not fun, but I feel like I can learn something here. Is it valid? It is.
I want to believe that we are in tune with our gut feeling, but just coming from so much of small T trauma myself, I don't think we have that somatic awareness where we actually know what the difference is between fear and intuition. So you really need to be in tune with your intuition to understand that there's something here or not. But I would say this is that if you check in with yourself and say, what is my default pattern? When I face a struggle, do I keep persevering or am I the one that leaves? So whatever it is, try doing something differently. It's always about flipping the pattern.
Do something other than the default, the default action, right? Okay. How do we know when we finish this whole contract and what happens next?
This is my favorite question because it's like you're doing all the work and then what is this about and how do you even ever feel good about it? There are so many people that will seemingly drift away when the contract is complete. And I keep saying contract and we keep saying contract, but we can say basically the learning is complete. Now, there are a few relationships that make a comeback in your life. They may either come back in a gentler capacity where you're sort of just two souls drifting in their journeys home and there's that nostalgia and you have a little bit of intertwining in your lives, or they may come back with a different lesson to support you in your learning. I've seen that happen countless times where relationships will change. They're still very much together, especially in more intimate settings like mom and daughter or husband and wife or siblings. They're still very much involved. Dynamic looks different. It's like between earth and sky, there's a huge difference.
Not only that, but like, how do we even know? Are we always aware that we are in a soul contract, or is it more on the subconscious level? How does that work?
We aren't required to know what the contract is. I think that takes away some of the fun in the human experience. So like, I always speak about soul amnesia, where we were born, and for the first few years, we are connected to our soul guides and people have imaginary friends and things like that. Ultimately, you aren't required to remember your past lives or any of the decisions you made pre-birth, because that's not what the human experience is about. The human experience is here just to learn the lessons, to make the most of your potential here, to just go through the actual thing versus having the details about the thing.
Speaking of lessons and that type of thing, if we get to the point where we feel like I've learned every lesson I probably could think of, can we decide that we don't want to incarnate anymore? When, let's say, a spirit guide or one of the council members is giving us an option to go back to Earth, we think, Earth? Hell no, I don't want to go back there again. I want to hang out with Prince and David Bowie and Tom Petty and play music and drink from a river of Cabernet. Why would I want to go back there? Is there consequences, or are we in a different frame of mind where we think, oh yeah, I got to go back because there's more stuff to learn?
I've heard that, and my understanding is that we can choose not to incarnate. However, our learning is here. So there's only so much time you can spend in the ethers without moving forward. And it doesn't mean Earth is the only life that we can learn our lessons through. So, for example, if one of our ancestors is watching us and they're watching something play out in our life, if that lands for them, then you've made that shift for them as well. So that's why we say a lot of our healing helps heal generations, because it does help everyone behind us or before us to overcome.
Before us. I can see where it would help generations after us, but you're saying it helps generations before us, mm-hmm. 10, 20, 50, 100, 200 years, and even more. How does that actually work, though?
It moves across space and time. So for instance, if you've been handed down this, let's say anger is your challenge, and you've been handed down, the way I'm going to express my anger is to yell and scream and make a hissy fit. If you are able to transmute that, then you've transmuted it for yourself across space and time. So the karmic debt that you may have had that comes from that aggressive behavior gets resolved. But for anyone that's in your lineage that is aware, and the keyword is awareness, right? If you're watching something and you learn from it, then that's also landed for them. That's why there's something about the Buddha, and they say how he enlightened generations and generations of his lineage just by being enlightened himself. There's a ripple effect, and that ripple effect across space and time isn't always limited to us. A very simple example, let's say I share a story and I say, you know, I learned the lesson that I don't want to do the thing. Then you hear that story, and for you, that is enough. You don't need to go through those motions yourself in order to learn the lesson. You've learned through observation. Have you ever experienced that before?
I have not. A lot of this is way over my head. I've also been told that with our earthly consciousness and our earthly brains, we can't really even understand it fully until we actually experience it. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Now, since you're on the subject of karma, what about a common complaint is that it seems like justice is what? It's like delayed.
I think the person that goes through the bad thing, all of us fall into that state of why me? Why is this happening? Whether it's a really big thing or even the littlest of things, we do question, what did we deserve to experience this? And I feel like the word deserve has so much of weight when you take it personally, whereas the word deserve does make sense karmically, but it's not a personal attack on you as your essence. So what that means is, if I did not study for the exam and I stayed up late and I was binge watching, which I've done, by the way, and then I complain the next morning that I'm sleeping during my exam or that I didn't pass it, did I deserve to fail? Yes. But does that mean anything about me? No. It's the behavior. So the deserving is not a personal attack. What you are experiencing may or may not be your karmic, your individual karmic debt. This is where it gets a little bit more layered. But for example, we think of COVID or anything that affects a large group of people, there's a collective karma involved as well.
Okay.
There's multiple factors enforced, right? You've got family karma, you've got country karma, you've got religious karma. There's basically a collection when with the same, you just being born in that collective will have its own effects. You are under that umbrella immediately, right? And we have got these, we've got millions of these umbrellas over our head. So when you've been through all these forces, there's ancestral stuff, there's family stuff, there's individual stuff, it's hard to say what you deserve and you don't. And whether this is happening purely because you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, or was there something in your past life, in those moments, it's not fair to say to the other person that you deserve this because they are already wounded. For that person, I would say, when you are ready, you will overcome this mindset of why me, and you will move into this mindset of I am willing to get out of this. I'm willing to see that this isn't permanent.
Right. And that's where forgiveness comes in. How many times have I heard forgiveness is the key? It will not only set you free, but it is one of the keys of enlightenment. And that's the quickest way to get there, as hard as that is. So just so I understand this, something bad, let's say I work in a company and one of my employees embezzles a huge amount and we go out of business. That might be just them incurring karmic debt. It might not have anything to do with my soul contracts or my path or whatever you want to call that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense when you imagine your relationship to the situation. So if you get super triggered by it and then you do everything in the world and you take them to court and then you get frustrated and you get drunk, then there is a karmic debt involved because you became so activated by that thing. I want to share a story here. I had a gym membership when I was in India, and this was a part of my resistance story. I renewed for 6 months of membership because I was like, I'm not going to get married to anyone outside of India, so I'm going to renew my membership. And this is me enforcing this vision of I want to be here. The person who I'd renewed the membership with had said that in case you're not able to complete the 6 months, we'll refund the part that you don't attend for. I barely attended a month of the gym. And I kept calling the guy, I tried 3 or 4 times over the next couple of months. And I said, hey, I'm getting married. And we talked about the refund. Can you do that for me? Like, I'm getting married. I want to put my money towards the wedding planning at this. He would just keep stalling. And he stalled and he stalled and he stalled. But I noticed that I wasn't activated by it. I was just like, maybe there's something here for me. Maybe I'm not meant to have the money back. And I let it go very quickly. I felt like it had nothing to do with me. So when we're able to be in that arena of this is nothing personal, I would say then it's safer to say that there's nothing in the contract for us. However, sometimes attacks are very personal. Brutal stuff happens to people. They will be activated because there's so much wounding created from what was happening to them.
Makes it more complicated too, doesn't it?
It makes it so much more complicated. At that point, even then, we realize it's not in our control. We can't bring them justice. We're not the people at play. However, some people become activists and they become leaders in that space to speak for and advocate for other individuals. So who's not to say that that wasn't for themselves?
There was a positive impact created by that situation. Even though maybe one party was wounded, the other party learned something from that and maybe made up for the negative karma they created.
Yeah. So like the question is very valid. Like, why is there delay in the justice system? Mm-hmm. However, I have not found the exact answer to that, to be very honest, because it goes above my head as well. But I have seen that karma does catch up. That much I can tell you.
Right. Maybe that's our solace for some of us, that sooner or later, someone who does bad things, it's going to come back to them because it is cause and effect, which we've heard many, many times. Nevertheless, it's a complicated subject, to say the least. But I think you did a really good job in explaining that for us. Vasundhara, thanks for joining us again. For all we know, there might be a part 3 in the future. Definitely some good stuff. In the meantime, how can our listeners find you online?
Thank you for having me here, Chani. I am My Spiritual Shenanigans, wherever there is technology and social media and internet and all things.
Excellent. I will once again put that in the show notes and a link to your previous episode as well. You've been listening to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing. You can find more info at closertovenus.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.